Welcome to Good Odds, Startups from Maine, the podcast of Upstart Maine. I'm Jason Harkins, a co-founder of Scratchpad Accelerator and a professor of entrepreneurship at the University of Maine.
And I'm Lisa Liberatore. I also co-founded Scratchpad Accelerator as well as Covort with Jason, and I'm the founder of Lisa's Legit Burritos.
Upstart Maine is a coalition of entrepreneur support programs in the Bangor, Maine metro region. We're a small region of 150,000 people in eastern Maine, where a growing group of entrepreneurs is coming out of higher ed and industry. In this series we call Jumping Off the Cliff, we're hearing from a variety of entrepreneurs in small-town Maine about risk and how they concluded that their odds of success are pretty good. In our last two episodes, we've spoken to entrepreneurs who have taken different paths to entrepreneurship. Heather walked through a corporate career and into a business making beauty products, while Paul took his experience at the University of Maine and spun out a business that is now operating. Both of these entrepreneurs are building really scalable businesses oriented at a national or international market. And these enterprises have really big ambitions. But a lot of startups begin as hobbies.
Today we'll hear from an entrepreneur, Kevin Higgins of Higgins Fabrication, who moved from hobby to business. His business is located at the Bangor Innovation Center, an Upstart Maine Coalition member. He's had great success with custom furniture making, with a niche in industrial design, with fine hardwood tops and epoxy resin furniture. His business is 5 years old, and over the course of his business, he's wrestled with how to grow the business but also keep his hands in the woodworking, which is where his passion lies.
Let's hear how he got started.
I came out of the business world. I worked for a few big retailers. I was a store manager for Target and a district manager for Aldi Foods, and then a couple other miscellaneous jobs along the way. I was in the Army for a while, too. Woodworking has always been a hobby of mine. It's something I did on the side at different points in my life, and then just started doing more and more of it. And then with the availability of online marketplaces, I was able to sell. So started selling online, and it went well. Things started selling, and as they sold, I bought more tools and expanded and made more things and kept selling. So I kept doing it. And eventually it got to the point where I had to quit my job to keep it going.
I think what's so great is Kevin had an opportunity to try something, be in Bangor, Maine, where he loves and where he wants to be, and use the internet to test out something and to be able to continue to grow, but to be able to stay here because we have this amazing internet and great infrastructure being built and becoming an exporter of the Bangor region.
Right. And the internet acts as this unique distribution platform that empowers entrepreneurs who want to sell to people who don't live where they are. That before this, you could start a bakery in Bangor, for instance, and you could sell to people who live in Bangor. But through the power of the internet, Kevin is able to make and sell things and test his market with people that live, frankly, all across the country. And that's a really powerful multiplier of his efforts.
And he was able to, again, reduce his risk. He used the internet and he kind of tested it before making the big jump.
We sell about 99% of our products online. Our market is, it really can be anywhere. We sell all over the United States. Selling online has become a lot easier than it used to be. Things like marketplace websites, and there's a million of them out there. We focus on Etsy primarily, but we sell on a few others as well. It just gives you access to markets that you would never be able to access ordinarily. And they get a lot of eyes on your product, where as if you just have your own website, there's things you can do to drive traffic to it, but they're hard and they take time and in a lot of cases take money. Selling on a marketplace website will get you in front of customers a lot more quickly.
Entrepreneurs get into business in a number of different ways, and one of the things that you see hobbyists do so well is approach starting up incrementally. And in taking one step before another, before another, they have the opportunity to really assess the market, look at how their customers are reacting, refine their processes, and generally find ways to make sure that they understand, at least from a production perspective, how and they're going to be able to serve their customers.
He had a passion and he had a hobby, and it just started taking more and more of his time. So all of a sudden, he realizes that every waking hour that he's not working, he's doing this hobby, which is generating income and is building the tools and building the customers. And so this is the opportunity where you just kind of slide into business. You wake up one morning and you're like, oh my goodness, I've built this thing that is generating some income. And if I actually quit my day job, I'm really got the potential to actually fill in that salary because I've been doing it all along almost unintentionally.
I sort of slid into it a little bit. Like I said, I started this as a part-time night and weekend gig. So in that sense, there wasn't a huge risk. Like I didn't quit my job, take out a big loan, and then just cross my fingers and go for it. I never knew for sure that it would work. Like when I started, my goals were to sell a few pieces a month to support my hobby. Like I wanted to sell a couple of pieces, make a couple of bucks so that I could buy nicer tools and keep doing what I like to do. As it got busier, yeah, I started to get a little bit more confident, like, oh, geez, maybe I can raise my prices enough that I can live off of this.
As Kevin began his journey, he finds himself doing things that others might consider very risky. But it's evident that he is being very systematic and taking one step before another, trying to make sure that even as he takes risks that are well known and where he understands the potential costs and benefits well before he moves from one thing to another. And that is something that we see in many entrepreneurs in ways that make it very clear that they're trying to do everything they can to give themselves good odds of being successful.
It's hard to say whether or not I'm a risk taker. I mean, there have been times in my life where I've just said, screw it, and gone for it. joining the Army, I think I gave about 24 hours of thought into doing that and then signed the paper. But on the whole, I mean, I'm very practical. I'm a pragmatist. I like to have a plan, you know, an escape route, if you will. Like, and I've done that with the business too. Like, I mean, I've always had a way to any step forward I've taken. I've always made sure there's a way I can step back safely if it doesn't work out.
So I think one of those things when he talks about an escape route, the other thing that is a really important feature for any entrepreneur, hobbyist to scalable, is this notion of debt. And I know that I really struggled with it when I started my first business, Baxter Tea Company. I was really intentional to start small. I didn't want to get in over my head because the thought of what happens if it failed and then I've got all of this debt and how am I going to pay for it? And so for me, it was all about a lot of small growth. But then with Covort, we had to take on debt in order to open. There was not an opportunity to do this piecemeal because it would be very piecemeal and it would take years. And I don't think anyone would come in if there was only one chair and we need to sell 10 memberships. So it's just really interesting as this concept of debt that is super important, but the consequences of taking it or not taking it are very real.
Right. And when we think about what debt represents, it represents kind of this first or second or third stage of jumping into the business and essentially reducing the owner's degrees of freedom. So we heard Kevin talk a little bit about trying to make sure he had a way to step back. And when you take on debt, that reduces one of those areas where you can step back in because all of a sudden you owe a bank or if you take on equity, you now owe investors. And those represent commitments to your business. And so as entrepreneurs are making the decision to start, they want to be really intentional about making those decisions and really try and make sure that in deciding whether or not to take on debt, they have done that understanding the benefits of having access to that capital, but also the costs of owing somebody else money to start your business.
I didn't borrow any money when I started the business. I made a conscious decision to grow slower, but do it debt-free. And it's in looking back at it now, sometimes I second guess that and say, oh, geez, I mean, if I'd borrowed even like $20,000, it could have put me a year ahead in terms of growth. But that's also easy to say looking back because it worked. You know, it could have just as easily gone the other way. And the problem I have with debt is it can tie your hands a little bit on decision making sometimes because those payments have to be made. So by being a debt-free company, I can look at every decision in terms of what's the best decision for the long-term health of the company. I don't need to worry about week-to-week or month-to-month profitability as much as, say, you know, somebody who has to make that payment every month. Some examples of where that's come up in the past would be, let's say I make a big piece for somebody, something that's pretty expensive, and it goes wrong. I have to do a replacement for it or something like that. It's come up once or twice. It doesn't happen often, thankfully, but by having that financial pressure off a little bit, I can do the right thing for that customer in the month, which will get us a good review, hopefully. We'll encourage that person to come back and buy from us again. We'll maintain our excellent reputation online, as opposed to if I put myself in a tighter financial position, I might have to fight back on doing the right thing for the customer. And it's just nice to not box myself into that corner because I think it's best for long-term growth.
I think what's really nice about Kevin is he kind of shows us the thought process on this debate on going into debt or not going into debt. And he has the luxury of being able to grow slowly. He could make that choice. He could have borrowed 20 and maybe gotten ahead, but he also could kind of piece it together. And that is not the case for a lot of businesses, including several that I've opened, including my restaurant and the co-working space. I had to choose some sort of debt instrument in order to operate. And I think it's just that ability to kind of think through all of the pros and the cons and recognizing what those will do for you. Because there's some that you can't control. And I think that like the hiring piece, that you actually need those people. And that really is a noose around your neck, because this isn't about paying back a bank or paying back an investor. This is somebody's livelihood. And there is a lot more, I think, emotional connection to making that decision about hiring, right? We can look at money very objectively, but when it comes to kind of that hiring piece that every business that's growing, that's where it gets, I think, really complicated.
Biggest risk that I've taken so far was when I started hiring full-time employees. That was in everything else I did up to that point in growing the business. I found ways to break it up into increments and half steps. With machinery, you know, you can buy the small planer first and then sell it and buy a medium-sized one and then sell it and buy the large one. You don't have to jump right into it. But what's different about people is that person's depending on you for a paycheck. Like, there are bigger consequences than just money, if it doesn't work out. If they quit their job to come work for you and it's a disaster and you got to let them go or something like that, then they're out of work. I mean, that's a big responsibility to me. Like, I take that very seriously. So the first time I brought on someone who was 100% dependent on me for their income, that felt like the biggest risk that I took. Now, I had some part-time help, and that always, again, that was kind of my incremental step, was start with part-timers because they're not solely dependent on me. There's flexibility in their hours. It's easier to go back from that as opposed to taking the leap to a full-time employee.
One of the most commonly held myths of entrepreneurship is that there's this entrepreneurial personality, that there's this person who is born to be an entrepreneur. And I think we can all think of somebody in our lives who looks like an entrepreneur and may happen to be an entrepreneur, but there's definitely no evidence that this is the case. There's not one characteristic or one preference or tendency that defines who is going to become an entrepreneur or who's going to be successful in entrepreneurship. We find across the board that whether they're an introvert or an extrovert, whether they're interested in being their own boss or they're interested in making a bunch of money, there are a lot of things that entrepreneurs can be. And we don't have to look for whether or not we're like Elon Musk or whether we're like Lisa and Jason. We could be ourselves and our own person and be perfectly equally likely to be successful or to start the entrepreneurial journey.
And that need for autonomy is yet another characteristic. Some absolutely need it, while others don't. They're perfectly happy to be within the mix of the organization.
I don't have a big need for autonomy. I mean, I hear that reason a lot for why people start businesses, and it's never been one of the big compelling reasons why I chose to do this. I don't mind having a boss so long as they're a good boss. I enjoy the autonomy now. It's nice to be able to set my own schedule and stuff, but that wasn't a huge driving force for me. Like, you know, I'm okay, like I said, working for somebody else. I think, yeah, if I was working for a big company, it's different. The grass is always greener on the other side. Like, sure, like when I was, working at Target, for instance, I mean, Black Fridays, I would be ready to be out of that place. I said, screw this, I'm never doing this again. It's not how I want to make a living, but there's plenty of days now where I'm like, God, I just want someone to tell me what to do. Like, isn't there another department that can handle this? Like, I don't, because it's just, especially when you're a small business, it's all you. Everything comes back on you, and that's kind of the price of autonomy is, like, yeah, you get the freedom to, you know, set your own direction, but you get all the responsibility for everything, too.
I definitely understand where Kevin's coming from. When I own Lisa's Legit Burritos in Gardner and Augusta, I came to a point where I didn't want to be managing the day-to-day. I didn't want to be behind the counter. I wanted to be really at that business level looking out. And so through that, I brought on partners to manage it so that I could shift my role. And I think there's very real consequences for either way that you choose. It's a really big struggle because this is your company, this is your vision, and to leave something that you love, which was him, you know, being hands-on to go into management, which is what needs to happen in growth. Some people don't want that. I wanted that. I wanted to be more business and less on the, you know, in the trenches. That's not every entrepreneur. And this is a really common struggle that as any entrepreneur is growing faces. Where are you going to be within the organization? And the answer is not a one fit all.
Right. The key here in terms of doing this well is to be intentional and to be really systematic in making this decision. Do I want to be the technician, the person that does the core production function of the organization, even if I don't do it all alone? Or do I want to become a manager, recognizing that trying to do both at the same time leads to those outcomes where you feel like you're being pulled in 40 different directions because today you got to make a table and run payroll and figure out how to hire an employee and fill out paperwork for the state. You really need to make that decision and be systematic. And whether Kevin will in the long term decide to grow his business and become a manager like you did, Lisa, or he'll decide that he really wants to have one foot in the workshop all the time and either hire people to complement his skill set or restrain the growth of the firm is something that only time will tell.
My biggest goal at this point is to just continue to improve the portfolio that we offer and have some modest growth in terms of volume. We're not looking to be Thomas Mosher. Like, we don't ever, I mean, they put out a great product. I don't want to operate a factory. I like having a custom shop where we get to work one-on-one with the customers and a lot of personal attention to each project. So my goal is just continue to make better pieces that can justify, you know, better prices too. We want to make more money, of course, but it's, we want to do it through quality, not through volume. I grapple with the growth quite a bit, in terms of, yeah, the bigger we get, the less hands-on woodworking and building I'm doing, which is the whole reason I started this business, is because that's something I enjoy doing. But at the same time, I want to make a living and make a good living, which requires some growth. So initially, I just went full out. I said, I'm going to get, you know, as big as I can. I want to shoot for a 10, 20-person shop, and then started heading in that direction, got up to 4 employees, and realized that I was becoming chained to the phone and to the computer, being a manager again. So I've backed off that a little bit in the last year or so, but just looking long term, I think I'm going to have to head a little bit more in that direction and try to find some middle ground. We're going to have to grow and get bigger than we are now. And my strategy with that is to outsource as much of the administration as I can. There are companies that will take over all your human resources stuff and even, you know, management and things like that. So I'm going to be looking to some of those so that I can stay building, but also continue to grow.
Learn more about Kevin's story and Higgins Fabrications at www.higginsfabrication.com and more about the Bangor Innovation Center, the incubator where his business is growing, at www.choosebangor.com/innovation-center. Thanks for listening to Good Odds Startups from Maine. Our next podcast will continue to explore how entrepreneurs think about risk and their odds of success.
Meanwhile, learn more about Upstart Maine and our coalition of entrepreneurial support programs here in the Bangor, Maine region at www.upstartmaine.org. Coalition programs include incubators, accelerators, pitch and networking programs, co-working space, internship opportunities, and startup business education and lending. Together, we're building a community that fuels entrepreneurship. Let us know how we can help you pursue your dreams as an entrepreneur. This podcast was produced by Nescom Productions at Husson University. Jordan Verge is our audio engineer. This is Jason Harkins.
And I'm Lisa Liberatore.
For Upstart Maine.